Ready for the mosh pit, Shaka Bra.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to StrangeCast, Player One vs. Puzzle, Life is Strange podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Adnan. My other co-host, Adam, is here. Adam, you here?
I'm here. I'm growing out my beard, so that's why I'm a little scruffy scruff.
Scruffy scruff. I'm also scruffy scruff as well. And I'm also going for a run after this, so the running outfit is back as well. But we are back for another podcast episode, second one of 2024, so I hope you're all doing well. And obviously a lot to talk about. So without further ado, if you are new here and you're on YouTube,
He's I'm just curious, before we go with the whole thing, you're going for a run after this.
Yes.
What is the temperature where you're currently at in London, or wherever you live?
London, Manchester. No, it's freezing. It's freezing out there. For UK weather,
say,
it's cold.
Yes, it's cold, but you're still going for a run. Now, is it my cold?
No, it's not your cold, or it's not Canada cold. That's different cold.
Because right now, as we're recording this in North Dakota, we're talking Fahrenheit right now. -3 feels like -27.
Oh my god!
So you can imagine.
Yeah, but we're not on that level.
I was just like, he's going for a run. What's the temperature? But I just want to interrupt and just say, like, okay, no, he lives in a better place.
Yeah, we live in a, well, because our weather's really different. Because if you ever visit the UK, it's like the house is like built to keep heat in. So it's like when the summer comes, it's like a sauna essentially, because your house is like just basically like turns into a sweat box, because like air conditioning isn't really a thing here unless you're really rich and whatever else.
Your weather isn't so nice right now. 43 degrees.
43
anyway,
degrees.
Go ahead. Well, 43 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. It's not the worst.
6 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, it's not the worst, but I'm planning like going for a run, and I'm running my way to Starbucks as well. So, that's my priorities at the minute. But anyway,
yes.
If you are new here and you're on YouTube, please do consider dropping a subscribe on the channel, turn on notifications, like the video, and share with your friends. Helps stay up to date with the channel, helps keep up to date with the content. And StrangeCast is available on all podcast services. So check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify with the video version one, everything. So do give us a rating. And obviously as well, thank you for people who've been rating us on Spotify. We're now back up to 4.9 as a rating. We have 14 ratings. So we've moved up by 0.1, Adam, which is a star, which I'm happy with. And I'm also blaming you for us losing 0.2 to start with, because like you must have said something which was like, controversial.
That's fair. I do say a lot of controversial things.
Yes. It is completely your fault.
Yes.
No, but thank you, though, for everyone who's rated us. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, do drop us a rating. We only have one on there, so everything is very appreciated. And one more thing as well, we are obviously making content for the YouTube channel. We have a Lost Records Bloom and Rage playlist on the channel, so you can watch the videos, which are just for the YouTube channel. So if you do listen just via podcast services, do come and visit the channel, because you'll find content. And hopefully by the time this has come out anyway, you'll see my trailer breakdown for Lost Records, Bloom and Rage's teaser trailer from the Game Awards last year. So do come to the channel and check that out and let me know what you think. Without further ado, Adam, you ready?
I am ready. I have the page up.
Yes. And then speaking of Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, we start there, sort of. We start more with Don't Know Montreal's at the focus of this. And a very interesting piece, because we spoke about the other one that we did where it was about Yellow Jackets. Michelle talked about Yellow Jackets and Luke speaking and Frederica speaking. They did another media round on Game Developer, this one as well. And it's technically not much about Lost Records. It's a completely different subject, but I thought we'd bring it up. And also, Adam, as well, do you not find it very interesting? Like, Riverside that we record on and stuff. You can have other people that appear on here. It's not just a two-person lobby. And it's like Frederica, Michelle, and Luke. It's like there's easily three more slots we can open up on the recording software.
Sure.
So interesting that they've not been on here for the media round. Just a little bit, just for food for thought.
Have they been asked?
No, but they are always welcome. I'm sure they'll we'll cross paths at some point on here, hopefully. But yeah, the invitation is always welcome for them to come on here and promote their game, because this platform is here for them to do that. Anyway, article. So, Game Developers article is all about AI with Don't Know Montreal. So the article is titled, Why Don't Know Montreal Will Probably Be the Last Studio to Adopt AI. So again, this is an interview with Frederica, who is the managing director at Donor Montreal. You have Michel Koch, who is the creative director, or Michel Koch, according to Adam, but Michel Koch. I like Michel Koch as well. I like it being shortened.
Because like I thought French people like a more elegant name, like Koch.
I think Koch is German. Origin. I think it's German. I looked it up. It has German origins to it.
Oh.
So it's like, Michel is French, but, you know, one of those. And yeah. Oh, God, it's not my...
Just like I'm American, but I have Hungarian roots.
Exactly. Ooh, exactly.
Spooky.
Well, I have it with my name. Like, Adnan's not necessarily like an Asian name. Like, you don't know meet many Adnans out there. Like, I had a WWE wrestler once say to me, he's like, are you, he asked me if I was Bosnian. He was like, are you from Bosnia or from Eastern Europe? And I was like, no. He's like, it's just because you expect someone to meet someone from Turkey or like Bosnia or from that kind of region of Europe, if anything. So, and obviously as well, I like Michel Koch as well. We can't call Luke Bag because I just, you know, we can't shorten his name to Luke Bag. It doesn't work like that. But Luke Bagados is the other person in the interview, which he is the executive producer at Donor Montreal. So this is purely a chat about AI and, oh my God. Right, look at this as well. This is what happens with modern journalism. Just for anyone in the video version, this is my article screen.
Oh,
I can't
my God.
See the I cannot see the article. The entire article is covered by this, and I can't close it. Like, who makes the interface for this website? Like, oh my God, awful, awful. Let me try and see if I can scroll down before it comes back up again. Okay, let's just start here then, if anything. So, raising the top, we're going from Don't Nod's narrative games don't have much generative AI. So, raising the topic of generative AI with Bagados, Koch, and Fernie Jennings lit a major fire under our pre-holiday Friday evening conversation. An observation... Oh my God, it's popped up again. Adam, can you take over, please?
An observer could have clearly seen we were all a bit worn out by the sprint to the end of the year, but jamming on what generative AI means for game developers suddenly brought out the hot takes and the industry insights from all of us. Bagados cut right to the core of the issue of the topic, which is that the industry leaders are grappling with every ballooning game development costs. That's very important. Game development costs. Mm-hmm. Game costs. Games cost a lot more to make. Iteration time is very long. Iteration time is very long, and everyone wants their game to succeed so they can survive. He said. He said there. He understood why people would look for ways to improve their workflow, but said he's still wary about introducing tools to the production pipeline. And then he says he admitted that. He admitted here that Don't Nod Montreal would probably be the last studio to use technology when developing content for games.
Mm-hmm.
But yes.
Okay, do you want me to take it back over? Because I've managed to stop the page from loading, so hopefully none of the adverts pop up, but thank you for that. So the next section as well is that games like Lost Records, Bloom Rage don't benefit from quickly produced and often uncanny content. Every environment the player traverses is loaded with art assets that tell small stories about the game world. The game story often shifts direction with input from the voice actors who grow to understand the characters they're playing alongside the writers. And for the writing itself, well, you can't make a game like Lost Records without a creative team that grew up obsessed with American TV shows like Twin Peaks and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Michelle said, and I quote, a lot of my creative fuel came from watching a lot of American culture, even if we have a lot of great media in France. I never would have guessed Michel likes American culture.
You
know? Yeah. Same with Jean-Luc and Luke. Yeah. It's very, very much evident. But yeah, it shows very much in like all everything that they've done. Like, it's always been a reference to that. And obviously Stephen King as well. You know, it speaks volumes about how much they're influenced by that. I've just closed the article. Anyway, continuing, let me just quickly jump up to another part here.
Basically, Michel had said that America is the greatest country of all time with no problems at all over here because we produce great media and we're not problematic at all, which is why he moved to Canada and not America. It's too good over here.
No, so let me just continue with this part because there's some interesting bits more about the AI stuff.
By the way, America is very problematic. I just want to put that on the record.
Oh, do you know what? Every country is problematic. Feel free to visit the UK. It's deeply problematic and other things. But anyway, continuing. So The pair also expressed wariness over legal murkiness of AI-generated content, with multiple lawsuits filed against generative AI developers and skill gestating regulatory guidelines on what AI creations can be copywritten. Any developer leaning too far into the ball may find themselves spending too much time in court if they land on the wrong side of the law. But Koch shone some light on where generative AI is helping the studio. The team has been using image generating tools to speed up the concepting process for Lost Records, with team members using it to better communicate the ideas inside their head. Koch, who's a former illustrator and has deep experience with the concepting process, said that tools like Midjourney have a role in the quote-unquote mood board stage of the concept design, because previously he and his colleagues would build such image references by digging through Google Images to find the right photo reference they needed. AI tools can't fully replace the process. He pointed out that quick sketches, even by people on the team who lack drawing skills, can communicate many ideas faster than trying to hash out a pose in Midjourney. He said, and I quote, "It still takes a long time." He said, "It doesn't take as long as it doesn't take as long to get to what you want with good artists that will give you better value. There's still a lot of." Still a lot of chaos and randomness you get with AI tools, end quote. Luke observed that there are a lot of quote unquote wrong opportunities, end quote, in generative AI, because toolmakers or investors often have direct experience developing games. He said, and I quote, "People might be interested to invest in AI stuff, and I see a lot of things that make it look like it will be a good opportunity. But when you don't have the experience of working in games, as an investor tempted to invest in these projects. I'd be very wary of my money if I was an investor right now," end quote. So just one more thing as well. This is part of Frederica's process of it. So Florian Jennings was the one to point that when making games like Lost Records, the quote unquote people element, end quote, of game development goes well beyond key creatives on a team. She said it, and I quote, Don't Nod Games were also the bridges between the stories in the games and what we were living in our studios. We are building our games with real people. Just quickly look at this. So with real people come real conversation. With quote-unquote real people, end quote, come real conversations, end quote. Not just the ones developers are having in meetings, but the informal ones that pop up in the studio hallways, at the lunch tables, or while shooting the quote-unquote, I'm not using that offensive word, I'm not bleeping out, at your desk. It makes my editing process more longer. I'm not saying that word. So let me just quickly just jump down here before we go. Is there another quote from her? Here's another part from her. So it's, when you're in the position of starting a new studio, she said, you can set the value pillars you want, but you can't guarantee exactly what the company culture will be. She said, and I quote, "I don't have a cocktail recipe in my back pocket for what's going to be the role. What's going to be the studio, what's going to be the culture, it's going to be something we brew together, and we need to make sure we are clear on the ingredients list," end quote. Donor's challenge, and we'll start the conversation in a second. So Donor's challenges even extend into the realm of language. Canadian Fournier Jennings speaks French, just like Koch and Bagados, but it's not necessarily quote unquote the same end quote French. Because the language has drifted in different directions in the two countries. Very interesting that. And yeah, that's it. There's a lot. We would be here forever if we were reading this. Just a kind of FYI. And I would go and suggest you go to gamedeveloper.com and read it, because it is quite interesting. And that language part is quite interesting. Adam, do you want me to start? Do you want to go? How do you feel?
So I just think that AI, first and foremost, is such a sketchy thing to talk about. So through and through in my music, I use AI. Isn't that wild? Whoa. I use an AI tool on DistroKid to help with the mastering process. And that's the thing, to help with the mastering process, you know? And if it doesn't work out, like, I will master it myself, which happens most times because AI is not perfect, but it gives me a better idea. But yeah, when I always think about AI, I don't think it's as evil as people seem to be. What is evil, right, is them thinking that AI is the talent to do things for. Think about it like building a house. Like, you've built a house and AI is your toolbox to assist you in building the house. But then, like, the construction manager says, like, wow, this jackhammer, this hammer, these nails, they've been building this house forever. They've been doing the work. The tools have been doing work. So I don't need to hire any more people to use these tools because the tools will do it for me. And so if the foreman, like, lets go all of his workers and just looks at his toolbox and says, do the thing, a house is not going to get built, you know? But AI, when assisted by humans and the talent that is involved that can only be done by humans, you know, that's where we can get a really good house. But if we just think that the tools are going to build the house, that's where nothing's going to get done. But yeah, when I think of AI, I think of it as better technology for better tools. Like he said, with up here with just storyboard. Yeah, the storyboarding process. He uses, what was the program he used?
It was something beginning with M. I can't remember what it was. Mid-Journey.
Yeah, he uses Mid-Journey. Yeah, to kind of build concepts, because then it saves you time from digging through Google and finding images, and then you can, like, storyboard from there. But if you take a Mid-Journey thing and said, this is art now, I'm going to sell this, it's like, no, dude, no. Like, that's not how this should work.
Yeah.
But it just saves you time. It doesn't save you talent. And that's where I think AI is, like, not evil, but, like, the way you use it can be capitalistic, like, slime, you know?
Yeah, because it's very interesting, because obviously this was chat, as I said in the article, like, they've obviously spoken to Michelle, Luke and Frederica late last year in that round, and it's obviously the holiday season started. Now they published the article. So they published that article on the 4th of January. And then the 2nd of January as well, it was reported that Square Enix's CEO said they're going to be aggressive in applying AI, quote-unquote. So that was a piece where it said Square Enix will be aggressive in applying AI and other cutting-edge technologies to its development and publishing functions. That comes from CEO Takashi Kiryu, who has shared the annual New Year letter setting the tone for the company in 2024. He said, and I quote, artificial intelligence and its potential implications has some time... Artificial intelligence and its potential implications had for some time largely been subjects of academic debate. However, the introduction of ChatGPT, which allows us to easily produce writing or translations or to engage in text-based dialogues, sparked the rapid spread of generative AI. I believe that generative AI has the potential not only to reshape what we create, but also to fundamentally change the process by which we create, including programming. So, like, that's just like part of the quote that you said. But yeah, it's an interesting one, because it's like, I get where he's coming
from. Anybody that has used ChatGPT will know that a movie script will never be, like, written by AI.
The problem is with that, I agree with you now. The only difference is that the difference is that AI is a learning computer. AI will always learn more than what we have. And when I said about Green before, I meant with Luke, but what he was saying about the studio and stuff. Like, the problem with AI is that AI has been around for, like, generations. It's been around for years and years and years. Like, even now as well, when you go on YouTube, you're getting fed, like, content via algorithms. Like, that is AI. AI is feeding you content. You use Siri, it's an assistant AI. It's basically, everything is entrenched in that. AI is a learning computer. It's going to develop and grow in a faster rate. If you don't believe me, in the 1990s, a very famous chess match was played between Garry Kasparov, who's a Russian grand chess master, and Deep Blue. And do you know who won that game?
Yeah, Deep Blue. Yeah.
And they played a rematch not too long after. And do you know who won that game? Deep Blue. You're not gonna win a debate with it. So it's hard to use AI and, like, use it without causing, like, loads of problems, because the problem with games at the minute, and don't know Montreal specifically, games are getting too expensive. So they're basically having ludicrous budget. They do. Like, I'm not taking the factor of, like, all the game developers. I'm talking from an outsider's perspective and not from a game development standpoint. I have no expertise in game development. I have no insight into how it goes, but I'm talking about the large scale of it. So you look at your Spider-Mans, your Horizons. they are dropping so much money on these games and they're not getting the returns on them. They're never going to make the big returns. Like, the only game that can have a ridiculous budget, and it's been reported at $1 billion reportedly, is GTA 6. Because Take-Two will run that for 10 years and it will run microtransactions through GTA Online. It'll make its money back. And it'll make its money back even through sales as well, because GTA, it's enough to warrant it. But then you look at other games. Remember when we talked about, like, Forspoken? And it's like Square Enix, like, it's now like $10 or something, $15, you can go pick it up for cheap. And it's like they basically dropped like $100 million, reportedly $100 million or something on it.
Which, if you told me that Forspoken was made by AI, I would have believed you.
Yeah, yeah. That's the funny part. That is the funny part of the entire conversation, where you say that AI can do that. But you're basically the mercy of things. It's like, yeah, you can do this as well. And I think, like, Don't Know Montreal will be a studio that will survive from it, because it's a very smaller studio and it works within realms of the budgets that it has. So, for example, Lost Records, Bloom and Rage is not going to be an open world Far Cry 3-esque game where it has like a massive production team on it. And I mean, like, massive, and I mean, like, in terms of triple A budgets. This is like, you know, I think Don't Nod would probably be double A, if anything, as a studio. So, like, they don't have to worry about, like, they don't have, like, the massive, like, amounts of, like, supply that they give to other developers and stuff. But, like, you can't stop using it. It's going to get more powerful AI. Like, that's the thing with it. Like, step by step, it's incrementally increasing, because you currently have Square Enix.
Like, that's the thing. I hope AI does get better, because here's the thing. A lot of people are just like, oh, it's going to take off our jobs. It won't. It won't. Like, maybe some of you, yes, but, like, it won't, because in terms of the artistry of things, it's just going to help artists get better, dude. The new Beatles song. There is a new Beatles song today, in the year 2023, last year, it came out, a new Beatles song, because of AI generations. Like, like, AI was able to get John Lennon's voice off of a cassette tape, like, no problem. And yet people were just saying, like, oh, AI is the worst. I'm like, AI is worse in the hands of capitalism. I agree with you. But in terms of, like, getting games better, what Luke is saying here, what Michelle is saying, as a very, very small artist myself, and I use AI to, like, help the process a little bit, it's more of just a tool, but it's not the replacement for what can be great, you know?
But will it replace them, though? That's the thing.
Will it replace game devs? Hell no. It will never. Like, that's the thing. You can tell, like, there's a George Carlin, right? There's a George Carlin special made from AI. It's called I'm Glad I'm Dead. Have you seen it?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it.
There is a George Carlin AI generated special, right? And even then, it's so good, but you can just tell that, just, like, there's no heart or soul behind this. And that's what AI will never have. It will never have heart and soul. It will never have a style. It will just have styles from, and that's the thing. It's learning from other people, but it will never be original. Like, it will never have original takes. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't think it ever will, because, like you said, it's been around for decades and we haven't gotten that far. Like, it won't. It just won't. I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's because, like, my thing is with AI is, like, it's been more of a rapid increase in the last 2 or 3 years, and more so with, like, if anything, with ChatGPT, like, really becoming mainstream kind of appeal of it. I just think it's still in its infancy stage. Like, there's going to be even, like, we haven't seen the modern marvels of what AI will do, for example, with, like, medical stuff and other professions. It's like we're only on the surface level of things. So it's like, this is a learning computer. It'll keep learning. So it's like, eventually it will get to a point where, like, we can feed it, like, in the full emotions and, like, everything else with people. Maybe it'll be hard for it to replicate it, but it's like, I agree with what he's saying as well, Luke, is the way that they position the studio and they want to protect the interests of the studio and the vision and the art and stuff. But I don't think you're going to be able to stop the machine of what it is. Like, look at what's happened in the news with SAG, for example. Have you seen what SAG did as well?
Oh my god, yeah, it's so
and I sat there, I was like, genuinely opened my phone up and I was like, huh? I was like, weren't you maybe with the actors? For context as well, I've got it here for people. Basically, video game
SAG.
Actors.
SAG! SAG approved that.
Yeah, so video game actors have criticized SAG-AFTRA for an agreement it made with an AI company. Now, SAG is, like, one of the biggest unions for actors. Like, you obviously, it heavily impacted Life is Strange before the storm, because actors went on strike. They were part of SAG, so they couldn't reprise this stuff. But basically, and just looking at the Forbes article here, it says, the top line is, voice actors are taking social media to criticize SAG-AFTRA, the union representing actors and other entertainment professionals. For agreement, it struck on Thursday. That article was published on the 10th of January, with an artificial intelligence company that would allow video game developers to use replicas of actors' voices.
And that's it.
So it's essentially that's
bull. Yeah, that's complete bull. But like, I hope our tools get better. Like, I hope AI tools will get better, like in terms of like speeding up the process, because we're just like, we want games now, and they cost too much, blah 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 blah. And just like AI tools, like illustrators, and even they talked once about having writing placements, so you'll have an AI voice to fill a void before the actor can come in, so that they save time in terms of just like, okay, once the actor comes in and the voice talent comes in, we're not wasting time in like placing audio, because we know where the audio is going. Unless you have made something in terms of a video game or a piece of music or developing a movie, right? Unless you've done that, like, you don't understand like why people like Michelle Koch and Luke and myself use AI to assist in terms of like getting the product to become better. You have to make something to understand like why this is such a gray area thing. But if you haven't made something, then you're just like, oh well, it's all evil. It's like, it's not though.
No,
the tools are getting better, and I think we need to get the construction workers back to those tools. Because the tools will not build the house. The construction workers will have a better time with the tools. I don't know. I'm so furious with like everybody on social media saying AI is just it's just evil. I'm like, it's not. It's awesome. It's not. So like, AI is great.
I agree with what you're saying, because like, I agree that AI has a place with like helping people. The only thing that I have like the thing with that AI doesn't stop here. It'll just keep growing and get more powerful. So whether you like him or not, and this is a conversation that Elon Musk had with our Prime Minister in the UK last year. He basically said to the Prime Minister here, he was like, well, AI will end people's need to work. He's like, it will get strong enough to do that. And it's like, but he's not talking about the construction workers.
I hope there's
workers.
An AI line cook. Can I not be a line cook anymore? So, that would be great.
So obviously he's not talking about like those kind of fields, but he's talking about the other ones.
Why not?
Like, it's been talked about for like years, and it's been in the conversation. It's like Amazon has been trying to build robots. It works in its factories with AI. It will eventually get to that point, because the modern marvels will take it there. Because in itself, even if they, for example, have an obstacle of building a robot, the AI will assist them in building the robot, because it'll have abilities that humans don't have. So it's like, unfortunately, the reality is going to happen, because I think like,
my hope of never being a line cook again, those dreams are sullied.
We'll have AI Adam making music, and you'll be working as a line cook for the rest of it. You're not. You can forget those dreams, man. AI Adam is going to be doing your music job. Don't worry about that. I'll be
joining
the line
cook. Once it takes my job
as a
line cook, I'll be like, whoa.
Well, AI will be taking over the podcast. I won't even have a podcast after this as well. Like, we'll both be like working as line cooks, and there'll be AI Adam and AI Adam on this doing the funny jokes and everything else.
Great.
Might even be funnier than us.
Like, every blue collar worker is just kind of like, they'll do my job. I don't have to work anymore. It's just like, it's like really? It's like,
No.
You keep fixing my car, sir.
You're gonna be the job of the future where you fix cars. We'll do everyone else's job with that. I get it though. I get the conversation with the same, because like, as it said, like they will be a studio that potentially embraces it last, but their studio is different from other studios. So for example, the bigger publishers are already gonna be looking at like, you know, Activision, Sony, etc. They're all gonna be looking at ways they can cut people out and bring AI in. Square Enix has just basically gone on record and be like, you know, here's like, we're going aggressive with AI. That could possibly, for example, impact the next Life is Strange, because Life is Strange is their IP. But it makes sense what they're saying, because it's like, they're like, yeah, we can easily translate things very quickly from Japanese to English. For example, why are we going to get a dialogue writer in then at that point? Because it's like, why would we need someone to dialogue translate from Japanese to English when basically it's AI will just do it like that? And there goes a job. There goes, you know, the excess money you're paying and stuff like that. not saying that I approve of it as well, just to quickly like FYI that, but I'm like,
I'm on the side of like, I want AI to stay as a tool and not a replacement of what humans need to do. Like everything that Luke and myself and Michelle are doing with AI, we're just using AI as a tool, as a hammer in our hands, rather than, you know, someone else doing the job for us. It's just more of like, okay, now we have better tools to get a better job done, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, for mixing and mastering, like, I do most of it, but the AI gives me an idea of where I'm at. I'm like, okay, so I need to lower the volumes of this. My velocity is too high on here. So it gives me a better idea to make a better song, but everything's done by me. But the AI assists me in saying, like, hey, you're screwing up here. It's like, okay, good. So I don't know. There's just a lot of people who have never made something like this will be on the side of like, AI is evil, and just like, no, it's not. Help.
It's just a difficult one to have, because, so, for example, it will take other people jobs. So we had that conversation. Well, I had that conversation with Kylie on the podcast episode. It's like, eventually, like, her legacy will be captured, because all she needs to do is talk into a microphone, and then anyone can start making Rachel Amber dialogue, and it could be in different tones. It could be in different, like, AI will be able to manipulate that, and it will be a threat to like her job and her existence and etc. and all that other stuff. But it's just difficult, because, like, you've already started conversations. I think there was one with Tom Hanks last year where he said, like, AI will protect my legacy even beyond when I'm dead. Like, they can use, I can make George Carlin in my films.
Like I said, there's a George Carlin special right now. It's called I'm Glad I'm Dead. And it's AI, which, by the way, I don't believe it. I don't believe it's all AI generated. It's just too flawless that I'm just like, no, there's some human touch. Like, no, it's all AI. I'm like, no, it's bull crap.
But again, it depends on what the AI is. So, for example, let's just take ChatGPT. Is very reckless, because it basically takes things off the internet. So it's still not as like as a generative AI. Because, like, you played Detroit Become Human, haven't you?
Yes, of course.
That's what's going to happen. It's going to be me and you on the streets with a placard and shouting an Android in a case. And that's what basically our life is going to be in the next 15, 20 years. You can't stop it. We're going to be like on the streets yelling. And we're like, there's our AI stealing our jobs. But no, I think, like, yeah, it's a really difficult one. I think maybe Montreal will be right with where it's at, but I think it's where the studios are as a position. It's like,
I just sent it to you.
Oh,
yeah, it's an hour long special, by the way.
Ooh, I'm gonna check that out. I will check that out.
Yes,
after the podcast.
Yeah, after the podcast, it's just incredible. Of just like some of these jokes that are in it, and I'm just like, what?
It's I just think it's interesting, though, because, like, for them, they'll be fine with it, because, like, Montreal's is a relatively okay sized studio, like a decent sized studio. They're a smaller developer, when I mean smaller in different ways of like representing that. And I think, like, for them, they can assist them in the development of it. However, basically, this is going to start taking all the other people's jobs at bigger studios. So Square Enix is just not going to have the same kind of ethics with it. It's going to be like, why do we need a dialogue writer when AI will just do the job like that straight away and get our entire dialogue done, or something else happens? I think, like, certain skills will happen, but then it's like, I think you're going to start seeing a massive impact in all these industries. I mean, like, the AI threat, as it's being called, will be, like, quite real for the next 10, 15 years, and it's going to have big repercussions. Look, as I said, in the space of these stories have happened in the space of like 7 days. This interview, for example, has been published after the holidays and has come out from Luke, Michelle, and Frederica. You've had the story from Square Enix about the Square Enix CEO saying that they're going to use AI in a completely different direction. And then you've also had the news about SAG-AFTRA and what's done with the AI agreement deal. And it's like three completely different stories. And you'd probably be like, actually, I expect SAG to be opposing everything about it. Don't know Montreal to be opposing everything about it. And Square Enix to be like, yeah, we'll embrace it. And what you've had instead is where Square, Don't Know Montreal said, we'll use parts of it, but we're still going to be very careful of how we use it. SAG has been like, we'll screw over the video game actors. And Square Enix has done exactly what you expect it to do. So I think it's quite interesting perspectives to give across the board. I think, I just don't know. I'm thinking too far ahead. As I said before, that Elon Musk interview, and whether you like Elon Musk or not, that's a completely different story. But that Elon Musk interview he had last year with our British Prime Minister, UK Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, he basically just said, like, AI will put an end to jobs. And it's like, and I'm like, I get where he's coming from, because he's thinking like 10, 15, 20 years ahead, thinking like you're thinking now, saying that AI is, oh, it's got all these issues, but it's like AI is just going to grow and it's going to get bigger and it's going to get improvements and it's just going to keep getting to like a different
Once
echelon.
It takes my job, I will be so happy.
You mean your job as a composer, right? And music stuff, right? Yeah, that's what it's going to take.
Cook. I'll be
going to be the line cook, and I'm going to
be somebody at chess. I'm like, make this steak right. It's just like, oh boy. And it's just like 15 tickets up. I'm like, now get the rest of the tickets out. Like, oh no, I can't do this. And AI just quits.
Like, as I said to you, I'm joking, but I'll be next to you in the line cook. I'll be like, hello, this is what's going to happen. It's like, we basically both been like out of the job and put on that.
Yeah, everybody's going to flood restaurants because there's nothing else they can do. They can just eat. And I'm like, great. Awesome. So
I found it a very interesting interview, though, this. Like, it was quite interesting when I read it, because I went in there thinking, like, we're going to read a lot about Don't Nod and Lost Records and stuff, completely different in terms of AI. And I get what they're saying from it. I'm just a little bit nervous with where AI goes. I'm thinking, like, 10, 15 years ahead from where they're at here in this thing. I'm, like, thinking long-term. So, like, hopefully I'm wrong on a lot of things, but... yeah, it'd be interesting to see what actually happens in game development for the next 10, 15 years, if anything. But yeah, we'll keep up to date on that going stuff forward. Mm-hmm. I think like this seems like the last interview that they've done for that media round, if anything. I haven't seen anything else pop up. Or maybe studio's still like setting up in like maybe like the industry's still setting itself back up from its December break. So maybe we've not seen any of the interviews that have been popped up, but we'll have to wait and see. Adam, next topic.
Next topic,
and obviously we're sticking on Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. Yeah. So just a very small topic that will come up here, which is on the 12th of January, which would be Friday yesterday, at the time we're recording. Lost Records' Twitter account tweeted with just a little thing that said, name drop when? With the characters.
Yeah, this is the official Twitter of Lost Records.
This is the official Twitter account that they run from there. I found that quite cryptic of like, oh, actually I think we're probably gonna get a name reveal very soon, or like some association, maybe one reveal if anything.
And this happened yesterday as we're recording this, so
yes so hopefully my trailer drop has already happened as well, my trailer breakdown, because I started scrambling to get that edited because I'm like, oh my god. And by the way, that was the most difficult video I've ever recorded, because you're like, and character A and character B and dungaree character and purple shirt character, and the one that looks like the one that we think is Nora. That was like what I was doing. Do you like try like associate character with character?
Yes.
So yeah, we've just got a little mention here for the topic. Obviously, like I think I know who the characters, which character is which character, I think, but that was like, you know, cheating essentially.
Yeah.
No, I did not use AI. I use the sleuthing skills that AI will never have, which is my sleuthing skills. So that was where I got it from. I think I've probably worked out which one's which for now, at least my last video. I think I'm probably much right on it. I want to know which ones you think are which. Or do you agree with me just cheating, essentially?
I agree with you. I am not good at naming names. I can't even name the names of like my coworkers. So like... naming names of people I don't even know, yeah, that's never gonna happen.
Yeah, so I think like obviously me and Adam will talk off podcast as well. Lost Records comes out this year, which is crazy. Like it just feels quite
it is crazy.
Feels like hasn't settled in. Yeah, let's just come out this year. So like, the wheels will start rolling forward, and I imagine we'll obviously get a reveal more about which character's which. And I think maybe we'll do one at a time. I think they'll do that. I mean, it'll be one character at a time. I'm still convinced that one of them is non-binary. I'm still very convinced of that. Yeah, because they're very specific with their wording. There's never a mention of them being girls. So it's like the character with the short hair, the one that we think is Nora potentially, that one, Juliet, used a she and her pronoun at one point for work artwork, but no guarantee. And then the one that wears the dungaree and has like the like blondish hair, Michelle... Oh, no, not the blonde one, the ginger one, the orange haired one. Michelle used pronouns for that one. So I'm curious about, I still think that there's one in there that's non-binary.
Dungarees are girls.
What is he doing?
You just said dungarees and I don't know what dungarees are, so I googled.
You know what dungarees are?
The now I do.
The blue.
Yeah, overalls.
Do you not know what dungarees are?
I don't know these things. Do I look like I know fashion? I'm wearing a skateboarding hat with a green hoodie.
Come on. I know what fashion is. Like, does that...
Well, yeah, look at you. You're all, like, shiny and all that. But, like, oh, yeah.
I'm here with my Adidas and Nikes out, and I clearly know, like, Louis Vuitton and what dungarees are. Like, come on. Like.
I don't know.
Is it American thing, or is it just a you thing?
It's probably a me thing. I'm pretty stupid.
Okay, I got a bit of, like, a heart attack moment, because I keep calling this character the dungaree character in the trailer breakdown. And I was like,
comments, did you know what dungarees were? Am I stupid? I'm probably stupid.
Really?
AI will take my job.
It should take your job on this podcast. Should take your job on this, and it should take your job in, like, making music as well, and even the food as well. Should just leave you where you are.
Take my job. Like, my boss will come in like, "Hey, AI is taking your job." Like, yes. No more of this.
And with this topic, just one more thing as well, because we can move on. Because as I said, there's not much from it. And it's just the fact that they tweet, and I think that we are probably going to get a name reveal. Do you think they're going to drop it on this month? Or do you think that they're going to reveal it this month? And then do you think they're going to reveal all of them at the same time? Or just over a period of time?
I think they will do it before Banishers drops.
Yeah.
So within the month, I'm going to say. Because if they said that name drop when, and this was yesterday, this was on the 12th of this month, as we're recording this. There's no way they said this on Twitter. And not for them to do it within a month. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
I'd say before Banishers.
Do you think they'll reveal all the characters at the same time? Or just one?
Oh, one. One at a time.
Who do you think?
What's that?
Which one do you think?
Oh, which one's first?
Yeah.
Dungarees.
The dungaree one?
Yes, because I like saying dungarees. Also, I think dungarees will play an important role in the story. So maybe dungarees will be last. I don't know.
Interesting. I think
I'd say one at a time.
Yeah, I think they'll do one at a time. I think they're going to do, like, character pieces where they can focus on them a little bit and give detail of it. And I agree with that. They probably will drop it before the end of the month. And I think, personally, it's going to be the orange-haired character who I'm still assuming is our main protagonist in this game. I'm very much keen of believing that.
Not dungarees?
No, not dungarees. I think the orange-haired character is our main character.
I love dungarees.
I do like dungarees as well. I think dungarees will come maybe like number three, I think, in reveal order.
Last records. Okay, I'm just like trying to look at all the characters. Dungarees is... Okay, I see who dungarees is now.
Yes.
Now that I know what dungarees are, I know which one is the dungarees character that you're thinking. Dungarees might be first, honestly.
Really?
I think so. Interesting. Yes.
I'm going with the orange haired character.
First.
That's I think that was first. That's your protagonist of this game, my assumption.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
I think that's gonna be that. Anyway, should we move on to our next topic?
Yes.
Okay, anyway, stay tuned as well. We will be doing more Lost Records content as we go as well. It's just very early doors. Speaking of which, and I might have mentioned it before, Banishers, Ghosts of New Eden. That is our final news topic for this episode. We got a new trailer from Don't Nod, dropped on the 11th of January, ahead of its release next month on February 13th. Again, Banishers was delayed last year by Don't Nod. It was coming out in the fourth quarter of 2023. And it got pushed back to this quarter. Watch the trailer, Adam. I enjoyed that trailer. It's really quite a cool game.
Yes, and I was weird. Wait, I just looked it up on Xbox, and it's just... Okay, pre-order, there we go. Sorry, I just looked up like how much it's going to be on Xbox because of the pre-order. I was like, is this going to be a $70? It's actually a $60 game.
Oh.
It's $60 on Xbox. So that's a little surprising. But yeah, I was for sure like, oh, there's going to be a $70 price point. But right now on Xbox, do you want to look it up on PlayStation? Just to be sure.
Let's have a look. Let's see what we've got.
$60 US. But yeah, so I was telling Adnan before we got on the podcast that this game watching the trailer, I think the story is cool and all, but I think it's all going to come down to the combat. Is the combat going to be fleshed out? Is it going to be satisfying? You know, did you find it?
Yes, it's here for £49.99 British pounds. And then the PlayStation Store, which would probably be about, I think they're pretty much the same price, wouldn't it? For,
yeah. £49.99. Pounds. $2. It's, yeah, just about $60. Yeah. So $63.72 over here.
Which is decent.
Yeah, so that's actually surprising. That's a $60 price point. But, you know, you can pre-order it now, and then you can get little bonuses on Xbox, like the Wanderer set DLC. So that's cool. It's got little trinkets, like a Wanderer outfit and a silver sword. So there you go.
We were watching this trailer before.
What's that?
For the listeners, we were watching this trailer before we started. And there's a moment where one of the characters says, "We're banishers." And I was like, Leonardo DiCaprio from, what's it called, that Tarantino film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where I was like, yeah, it's the sofa. I was like, yeah, I was doing the pointing thing, being like, look, there it is. That's the name.
But I do think it will come down to the combat. Will the combat feel satisfying? Will it actually feel like you have agency in it? Like, will it be as good as gameplay as Vampyr was? Because Vampyr's combat was excellent. But it all comes down to this. Now, it is the same team from Vampyr, from what I understand. But yeah, we will see. I think it's going to be a decent game. Unfortunately, I don't think it will make headlines. Mm. But, you know, like, Vampyr didn't really make that many headlines either. When it first came out, like, people were into it. But it wasn't, like, the household name, like Life is Strange became. You
just established a following, didn't it, Vampyr?
Yeah. It got its following, but it didn't really, like, change the game. I think Banishers might have the same kind of impact, where it's just, like, people will be into it, but it won't be like, oh my god, Banishers. I'm on Channel 3, which is a video game social media, and I remember when this came on, and I had to be like, oh, Banishers, it's a new Don't Knock game. And people were like, oh, I didn't know that. Like a gaming social media site had no clue that this was dropping. And I have to be the one being like, hey, first of all, listen to Strange Cast. And also, like, Banishers. So, yeah, it's a little wild. Yeah.
We usually drop the name Strange Cast 50 minutes into a podcast to you, but we'll allow that for now.
I'm actually 47 minutes in.
Banishers is an interesting game. I won't pick it up because, like, Final Fantasy comes out later that month, and it's like my life is going to disappear at that point, so you probably will never hear from me again.
I will pick it up.
Oof, there we go. He is doing it. Yes, there we go.
I'll play it and I'll let you know how it is.
He's doing God's work here. But yeah, I think, like, this is a game that's like Vampyr, pretty much, where it's like, I think it's going to obviously attract the Vampyr crowd. And obviously, you know, focuses publishing it, and the combat, also, as you said, is going to be.
I also tried to look up if it had any announcements to be on Game Pass. As of now, no.
No.
It is not announced for Game Pass.
I don't think Donald would want it on Game Pass right now. This is a big game for fiscal year. This is like one of their big games of the year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm like, I didn't think it would, but that would be super cool if it did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it does not look like there's any announcements to drop on Game Pass. I don't think Lost Records will, like, April, you know?
Yeah, I don't think Lost Records will be on Game Pass either.
No. I can guarantee that. Lost Records will not be on Game Pass. No,
these two games are very important, especially this one as well. This is big for that fiscal year. Don't Nod. It's, like, one of the big games, like, because, like, their royalties mainly come from what I remember as well, is, like, it comes from Vampyr and Life is Strange. And Don't Nod needs to, like, really, like, get big returns, and this game seems to be like the next step of it, where it's like proper, like, feels like a AAA game with, like, a big publisher behind it.
You ever feel like Luke and the rest of the team are just, like, watching this podcast just going like this, like, oh, you don't even know, friend. You have no idea. We're just, like, saying, like, no, it's not gonna be on Game Pass. Hmm.
Well, I don't think we've got many things wrong so far about Lost Records.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think.
But like, I can almost guarantee it. Like, I don't think it will be on Game Pass. I can. No, I can. No, I would. I wouldn't bet money on that. I don't know. Like, it's like it could. I think. Okay, percentage wise, 20% chance it gets on Game Pass. 80% no.
I'm saying 90% chance it doesn't get on Game Pass.
Yeah, I'm going 80% chance it doesn't.
I'm saying 90% chance. I don't think it's going to come on Game Pass at all. Lost Records.
No, I don't think. Yeah, in terms of that 80%, like 80%, like never.
Yeah,
never
I just don't see.
But
them
there
doing
is
it
because... a chance because it is such a big game, and Life is Strange games have been on Game Pass. And Donut does have a good relationship with Xbox because of Tell Me Why. So it's
but they
like
published that game though, didn't they? That's why.
But that's what I mean though. Like when I say that they have a good relationship with Donut, you know, like they have done business with Donut. So it's just like it's not like out of the question, but I don't think it's like I don't think Lost Records is going to be on Game Pass. And same thing with Banishers. Banishers has had because Vampyr has been on Game Pass for a good while. Like it was on Game Pass for a long while. And Focus games have been a lot on Game Pass. So it's like, it's not out of the question, but because the key thing that you were saying, it's at the end of their fiscal year. I don't think that they're going to put it on Game Pass. You might see it in April, May. It might come on Game Pass then, but day one, no, it's not going on Game Pass.
No, Luke and Michelle are going to go up to your boy Phil and be like, nah.
Yeah. Nah, there's no way. Yeah. It's like,
I only read this last year as well. And I was looking at, because I was looking at Donut as a company. Like, apparently, they only broke even last year.
Really?
The company. Yeah.
That's wild. Did you see the, real quick before we get into this, did you see that, the Insomniac League, right? It said that, what's the big one that they had on Xbox? Sunset Overdrive. Only brought in like $500 of revenue.
Yeah.
500. Something like that. Like it was so stupid little. That was like $300, $500 of revenue. And I'm like, dang, dude. Like I remember like I bought that. Like it was like huge for Xbox and like it only made very little money from it. So like that's insane to think about.
Remember Phil's document that showed in like the Activision court case that they had with the FTC, and they were basically outlining all the acquisitions they were doing and stuff. Like they are so far behind Microsoft with like the different markets, and even with PlayStation as well. PlayStation's like struggling now, like with keeping budgets in control, keeping like games in certain time windows and getting people to play them, because it's like you're like inflating budgets so much. And again, I don't know from the game development perspective, but when games are becoming much bigger and on scale, and they're coming out like as almost being treated as like, you know, big Hollywood films are. And it shouldn't, as they should be in certain circumstances, but it's like, it's so expensive then. It's like, you know, are you going to really recuperate the cost? It's like, if you tell me Forspoken was like $100 million reported budget, I'd be like, you know, make that budget $10 million and like make it a smaller scale game and be very concise with it. Because it's like, there's no market appeal behind that game. It's going to get absolutely clobbered when it goes out into release. Like, even Lost Records doesn't have a market yet right now, you know? Like, it just doesn't have a market yet. Even as Banishers, like you said as well, there's no guarantee that Banishers is going to appear on the front page of IGN with a review, and everyone's going to be reading it. For example, as well.
Yeah,
I looked on an article, I think, with IGN or something, with like Lost Records or something. And it only had very few comments on it. So it's like, hang on a minute, you need to like get to as many audiences as possible. Like, you know, you go out there and try and advertise it, because your game, even though you're making a game, you might have a reputation. So there's no guarantee you're going to have success from it. So, you know. You gotta be like pretty concise with it. But on the point of Banishers, I think it's an interesting project. I hope it's like successful for them enough to where it carries through in the same Vampyr kind of spirit. So it'll be an interesting watch to keep an eye out on there. Even if the story doesn't sell you, I think the gameplay does look dope as well. I just realized I swore, so I might need to bleep that out. But yeah, it does look pretty cool. So it looks pretty sweet. So I think it's one to keep an eye out on, and I might pick up when it drops in value. Twin Mirror is a game I want to play this year. I've got that on my list. It's dirt cheap now, and I want to pick it up because I'm just very intrigued by that game. So I will pick that up. Adam, should we wrap up here?
Yeah.
Okay, main topic.
Yeah, let's do it.
So let's move into our main topic. And I didn't actually define this as a title, but as of this month, January, late this month, episode one, Chrysalis arrived. So Life is Strange 1 turns 9 years old this month. 9 years old. I feel old, Adam.
Yes.
Yeah. If it's not this game, it's either this game or Michelle and Luke dropping like 90s trailers, 90s environment settings that make me feel old. I'm like, stop using my childhood as Lost Records' setting. I'm furious because I was born in the 1990s and I'm still 20 years old. I'm not 30.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, no, it's wild, strange.
Man. Yeah, I shared with you. So, you know, on the back end, I did promise to the listeners that I would play through the Life is Strange collection, and I tried to play Chrysalis. Bro. Oh my god, it's still broken. Oh my god, the game is still broken, dude. It's still broken. I can't recommend the remastered yet. Okay, that out of the way. I was trying to play Chrysalis. And one thing I said, I was like, okay, everybody was upset about the loading screen in between the dream and her waking up in the classroom. Opening scene. Right?
Yeah.
I felt like the loading screen was longer this time. Like, it was a straight up loading screen. And I just felt like I had time to take out my phone, open you up on Messenger, take that video for you, and just be like, oh, there's still a loading screen. Like, I had enough time to be like, have the thought process of, hey, Adden would love to see this. Take my phone out of my pocket, open Messenger, take a video, and have enough time to show you that there's a loading screen.
Ugh.
And then I still went to that video where, like, Zach is like, oh man, this is bull, and then throws the football at Alyssa.
Alyssa, yeah.
And then you rewind, and he doesn't have the ball, and he's just throwing it. And the ball is gone. And just like, and the lighting effects are just still trash. I made it not even halfway through Chrysalis. And I was like, I can't. I will play it again on Switch.
Do you the craziest thing about that entire, like, the fiasco and all that in between it is when is when Michelle was like, he's like, when they included the loading scene at the beginning of the game, he's like, we put so much time and resources to make sure that wasn't even in the PS3 version. He's like, Life is Strange was released at that time on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PS3, and Xbox 360. And he's like, we made sure that even on the previous generation consoles, that loading scene wasn't included because it completely destroys, like, the, you know, the transition for it. And it's like, they just interjected it whilst on the powerful console, and it still, like, takes time to load up as well. It's like,
oh, bro, how does this happen? And like I said, we've reported on the notes every time. It was like our most popular segment. Like, oh, what patch notes this time? And I'm we've reported on... What's that?
It'll happen this year as well. I told you this.
Yeah. And I was like, it's updated. I want to see. I didn't even make it through halfway. I was not at the halfway point of Chrysalis. And I stopped when he threw the football at Alyssa. I was like, I can't, dude. No. Like, I will play it again on Switch. Like, I want to see, because I remember thinking, like, the Switch version was, like, it's fine. Like, for what it was, a Switch port of Life is Strange, it's fine. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But this Xbox version, at least, I don't know. You can play halfway through Chrysalis on PlayStation and see if you get any remarks. But even the lighting is so bad, dude. I'm like, oh, I thought we fixed this, dude. Anyways, but in terms of the original, right? And I let my friend borrow my disc of Life is Strange, and I said, don't bring this back until you play it through. I was like, do not get the remastered. Here, take my disc of the original Life is Strange and play it through. Mm-hmm. But I always recommend it. I still, to this day, like, when I opened up the remastered and I heard that menu music of the first Life is Strange, 9 years ago. Like, I'm just like blown away, dude. It still holds up, you know?
Yeah, it very much holds up. That game is so good. Like, I had a friend play it last year, and it was like, just like seeing him play it and then like listening to him be like, oh my God, Jefferson. He's like, what? And it's like, yeah, it's like, it still hits home. And even that first episode is such a great introduction as well. Cause obviously it's just the first episode that was released this month. And it's like the start of the year, start of 2015 when Life is Strange started coming out. But that first episode is outstanding. It was such a great introduction. As you said, the main menu screen, the beautiful like music that plays in the background, our introduction to Max Caulfield, our introduction to Chloe Price, our introduction to all these different characters, Dave Madsen, etc. Even the ending as well is fantastic as well, with the Sid Matters montage that they had with obstacles. It is truly, like, I think it's possibly one of the best openers of any episodic game. Maybe The Walking Dead season one is probably its rival in my eyes. The Wolf Among Us season one as well. I think those are the two strongest openers that rival it. But yeah, as you said, I think it aged really well. Like it's grounded in its time, because it's like they made it with the limitations they did, and the artwork is you know, in a certain style. So it's like it's reflective of the game. It's like when you look at Metal Gear Solid 4, you look at GTA 4, they're very like darkish, and it's kind of like the colors are like completely different from what we have now in most modern games. But I like that the aesthetic stays the same, and that's why I think that's why they basically faltered a little bit with the remaster, because it's so different to change things. It's so grounded in there. It's like that game is always gonna have to look like that, because it's like it's just part of the design, the aesthetic. It was that Sundance indie style game, even though it's not indie, it's AAA essentially, because it's published by Square Enix. But generally speaking, yeah, the first episode was fantastic. I really enjoyed every moment of that, and it's still, even when I went back to Remastered Collection, we played that as well. It was just like, it was so much fun to go back to play the first Life is Strange episode from the first game. It holds up,
but the bugs were garbage.
I think
that's what sullies it, man. Like, I think that's what just like ruins it. But, like, I want to experience it the way I remember it, in terms of like graphical fidelity and the colors and everything. I just wanted everything to be just upscaled and a little bit more vibrant, and it turns out it just broke it, and I'm like, oh my God, what is this, you know?
Yeah. It's hard, because like they did that with the GTA trilogy, that they remastered and they upscaled things, and it was like things started falling out of place, because it's like you can't just do it, because it's like it's so, that game is just entrenched in the way that it was designed and stuff. So it's like, I think like, I don't put like a lot of blame on Deck Nine's feet, by the way, for that. It's like,
no,
they were just the developers. Like, they did a great job, for example, with the lip syncing. That was great. Like, they absolutely did that. For me, it was completely on Square Enix. Square Enix is the publisher. That they're publishing it. You're putting the product out, that the publisher is doing that. So you always remember as well, the developers are just making the game. They're making the game. It's the publisher overlords that are dropping, like, this needs to come out this day, it needs to come out this day, and stuff like that. And I've always been quite critical of Square Enix for that. And obviously you can see why, like, they don't come back on here for anything. But, like, I don't expect anything from this channel. Like, this is unfiltered opinions. You don't see me and Adam jumping up and down with our little press kits being like, oh, look at what we've got from a publisher. You get straight, honest opinions on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Always will. But no, like, it did solve the enjoyment from that. But in general sense, though, like, they nailed the aesthetic, the design, the gameplay, the rewind mechanic is still talked about to this day. That just told you how much of an impact that game had in terms of even the episodic genre, because it was nothing like that. At that point, it was like Telltale Games. And it was like, it was fun, but it was basically the same thing. Choice, you know, someone remembers this. It's not, it didn't have that supernatural element or that supernatural change in gameplay, which changes the way that you think about something. So really enjoyed that. Obviously, the acting performances, like, we got introduced, the world was introduced to Hannah Tell and Ashley Birch, like, burst onto the scene. She obviously did Tiny Tina in Borderlands, and she was in Hey Ash, but like, that was like Ashley Birch prior to superstardom Ashley Birch right now, which is crazy to think about. That that took her into a different path. But yeah, it was great performances, and same with the actors as well, like, you know, Kate Marsh and Nathan Prescott, all really enjoyed that. So a great, great, great game, and it's great to have like a 9-year anniversary of it. So many great moments in the entire series. But that first episode, that's probably one of the best episodes in the series. I think I personally think the third episode's the best, but I think it's like the second best, if anything.
Honestly, yeah, because it just started everything. And that's what I say about, so okay, the Suicide Squad game, like, the all the people are talking about it and all that, like press releases have had their touch on it. And apparently someone said, like, now you have to get like really far into the game for the game to be good and blah blah blah. And like all I kept thinking about was like, that's not the player's job to be interested in the game. That's not the player's job. It is the developer's job. It is the story writer's job. It is the music's job to get you interested in the game. And I think that Life is Strange 1 did that job. Like Michelle's vision and Raul's vision, like everybody on that team, their vision was just like, we need to get them from the get-go. And that's what Life is Strange episode 1 did. It's just like, it's our job to get you interested like in within the first hour. Like, not like other games where it's like, well, you have to play a lot for it to be a good game. And it's like, that's not my job. It's not my job.
Yeah.
It's like, you get me interested, but Life is Strange 1 did that job, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's like all the different devs on Don't Nod, from like Edward Kaplan to like Michelle to Raul to Luke to Jean-Luc to Christian Devine, like all the people that worked on that game. It was just it just all fell into place so perfectly. And it's like with the Suicide Squad, it's like that game, it's like, I'm not having that defense where it's like you play that game and you watch like Final Destination 2, it's worth it for the payoff at the end. It's like, no, it's not. It's like, it has to start off strong.
Exactly.
The journey has to start off strong. It has to go throughout the entire thing. You don't just, you know, have like a one bit payoff. That game, Life is Strange 1, starts strong, ends strong, and it's like perfect.
Yes.
And by the way, when you're speaking about Suicide Squad, I saw that they had a little plaque in there to Kevin Conroy.
Yes.
That's on the wall, which is like, you know, RIP, like, oh God. It feels weird knowing that he passed away. Like, he was such a great voice actor.
Yeah.
And great Batman as well. But anyway, like on Life is Strange as well, like, yeah, it was meaningful. Like you had all the little interactions. It's the meeting of Chloe Price and Max Caulfield. Like, who would have known, like, it would have set off the chain events of like what we had, where basically like this game exploded and like became such a big phenomenon for Square Enix. Like, Square Enix said probably like, we're just like, whatever with this. They were like, we'll publish it, but we're taking a bit of a gamble on it. And like, lo and behold, it's like, you know, 9 years later, last year hit 20 million players when they tweeted out it. It's like, that's like a milestone for like 9 years of like a window of like hitting 20 million players overall. Like, most games never even see that number. I really enjoyed that first Life is Strange. It was truly like great game, and it's quite surreal to hit 9 years on that window. It feels like
a lifetime ago. More to go towards that decade, and it still will hold up.
Yeah, that's when we get the news of the remake coming out. That's how we get the news.
Man.
I told you, man.
Anything will be better than this remaster, man, because I'm just like, man. So games are hard to make. It's a hard balance. I'm not trying to say that, like, oh, why couldn't you do this, blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, man, I think, like you said, like it's the publisher's fault for saying, like, you need to do this and this and this and blah, blah, blah. Like, it comes down to Square Enix. Like, it's all them. But at the same time, just like, wow, all these patch notes, and it's just still this busted mess, man. I'm like,
do you know,
wow.
Do you know what the problem with the Remastered Collection was, and even the Arcadia Bay Collection, as they called it? Interesting to call it that. You know, why there was an issue with it? They basically just used it as a way to supplement Life is Strange True Colors. It was like, Life is Strange True Colors was strong enough as it was to be sold as it is. They just basically put it as a package to create a quote-unquote an ultimate edition, as they did, and to kind of like add something in there. Like, they basically had like a period of like a dry spell of like Life is Strange where like no games had come out since True Colors. It's like, they could have easily waited until the 9th anniversary, or even the 10th anniversary makes a lot of sense, to actually drop a remastered collection, for example. And you'd have like space in between that. It's like, you just didn't really like think about it. It's like, why is it being added into it? Those two alone, Life is Strange 1 and Life is Strange Before the Storm, sell on their own. It's like, why are you like coupling it into True Colors? Why are you making this ultimate edition, just randomly dropping it? Like, and then you had to push it back as well because it didn't come out with True Colors at the time. It's like, I don't get why there was such a rush with it. Just give Deck Nine time to do actual development on it and then publish it with as the publisher's label. It's just random, if anything. I just didn't get that, and that's why it's like got so many bugs, because it would be nice. It's obviously still don't agree with some of the changes they made, etc. They were like, you know, we had the thing about the ending with like Max crying, like, and the same with the intro, but like I agreed with maybe one of the changes they did, which was like, you know, the fact that they put more bottles in the junkyard.
Yes. So that was a great change. That was an excellent change.
Yeah.
But so like that's everything else, Yeah,
so I was like, that's actually a neat feature and like a nice addition to put into there and like just kind of like smooth the process along. So it was like, actually, this is, and everyone noticed it as well. Everyone was like, why have I got through this really fast? And it's like, you got, you know, a couple of extra bottles cheeky added there just to, So it's like a nice little thing to have there. But like, generally speaking, like the problem is like kind of recommend it and enjoy it. It's like, you just go back to the original Life is Strange, which is like the one that was released by Don't Nod, and play that instead. Cause it's like, I'm not going to have to like see like, you know, graphics messing up or like some like duel going off, or for example, like as you had with, you know, the Alyssa scene, or you have like with the opening. It's just like, you know, you sit there thinking like, what was the point of this? And then like usually I do suggest to people like you go and pick up the PS4 version and start from there, because it's like you'll enjoy that a lot more, at least, or the Xbox version, if anything.
The originals, like not the remastered.
But like generally speaking, it's a fantastic game for what they had for the budget, the scale of the game. I miss having games like that coming out more often. Like that's why I had this bed we made that came out from Low Birth last year, and it felt like in the same vein, the same kind of like formula, etc. And it's like that's why when you start playing those games, it's like you're actually like, oh, this the ethos of Life is Strange is kept. And obviously this game has had influence on so many things since then. As I said, this bed we made as an example, it's had an influence on Lost Records, and it's obviously from the developers of that game, but like they're still influencing their own game, is going to influence their next game. So all quite crazy. But I have to ask you, Adam, as well, like obviously 10 years will be next as well next year. Do we get the remake announcement then?
No.
They'll remake this game.
They will, but like...
They'll not... remake this game.
Like, maybe 15-year anniversary, but... no, not 10 years. This isn't Naughty Dog. This is Square Enix. If this was Naughty Dog, I would be like, yeah, it's going to come out next year. Like, in fact, they're
currently remaking The Last of Us Part 2 at this point.
Exactly.
Like,
bro,
that's what Naughty
Dog
does.
Remaking Last of Us 2. A 3-year-old game. Almost.
Well, no, that was a remaster that they've done. It's a remaster for a 3-year-old game. By the way, just for a 3-year-old game remaster.
3 years old. That came out on the same generation. It came out, dude.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, no, well, didn't it have a PS5 version? Or just PS4?
No, come on, literally right at the end of PS4.
Yeah, I remember it came out right at the last, but I didn't know if it also had a PS5.
No, this is why they're dropping the PS5 version. That's why they made it a remaster with like additional little bits and bats in between it.
It's like, dude, why? It's so weird.
Yeah, I've that's why my tolerance for remakes and remasters has completely gone now, because it's like I'm just sick and fed up of it now. It's like, stop it. It's like, exactly. Just like stop it. But with like Life is Strange 1, they'll remake it.
Yes,
I'm convinced on that. Like it won't be Don't Nod, but be affiliated, but they will remake it. They'll cash on the opportunity from it. It'd be interesting to see what they do with it as well, because like even if they'd remake it, it's like, do you keep all the same voice? Do you keep the same voices, or do you recast? Because then there's a different conversations to be had. Because some of those actors aren't even like, try and find Danny Knights to get Victoria Chase, and like you'll do something that I've never done for like the last 5 years, where I've tried to try to get an interview with her and it never happened. But it's like she doesn't even act anymore, so it's like you'd have to recast Victoria at that point. They might have to do what they did with the ADR voicing, what they did with the remastered collection, where it's like you upscale everything to Unreal Engine 5, and then bring in actors to do the lip syncing and then the motion capture. Well, yeah, it's an interesting one, but I'm still 100% convinced that they'll remake this game. They're going to take the opportunity to cash in on it before the IP starts like crumbling and stuff. And obviously, as I said, with Lost Records coming out on the window as well, it's like this could be the nail in the coffin for Life is Strange, potentially. Mm. We start that conversation. I think it has all the potential of doing that as well. It really does.
Yeah. On that note, it's the best game that's ever come out, ever of all time, and the remaster was a terrible mistake made by the publisher and not by the developer.
It's interesting. But we'll move on to our topic before we move into Spread the Arts. And by the way, as well, we also got introduced to Samuel in this first episode.
Yes.
God bless Samuel. And his ladder.
Yes.
He climbed up that ladder too many times during my playthrough.
When I was playing through Chrysalis in that the first episode, and like I was literally like right behind Samuel, like, come on, climb the ladder so I can solve this puzzle. Come on. I have to notice you on the hook. Come on now. You keep going. And it's just like he finally does like, hey, I can solve the puzzle now. But yeah, no. Great Samuel. Great guy.
Yeah, great Samuel. That moment and also Victoria getting drenched in paint are two favorite moments. They're very good. Yeah. Very, very good.
Very good.
But anyway, we'll move into our little topic before we move into Spread the Arts. This is, as we said in our last podcast, we're doing a little comment of the podcast. So obviously we had a wonderful amount of comments on our last podcast episode, but I've just picked one out so we can use it for just a quick mention, and it engages our listeners, brings them into the conversation, etc. So this was left recently, and I think it's a nice springboard of what we were talking about in the last episode, which was heavily around Lost Records. It's from at Not the Milky Bar Kid, which I love that username. I love that people have like really great imagination with their usernames. This was a comment that was left in the video, which said, nice episode again. Thank you. We really appreciate that. You mentioned that you can't think of another game with a non-binary lead character. You should check out Goodbye Volcano High.
Oh!
That has a non-binary protagonist, Fang, as well as a fantastic soundtrack worth checking out.
Yes.
Thank you, Not the Milky Bar. Why are you here? Like, why are you here? If you can't remember that on the podcast, should we just bring in Not the Milky Bar?
No, I wanted to play it, and I knew about it. I've wanted to play it. I just haven't gotten around to it, but I knew there was a non-binary character in there, and I can't believe it. Yeah.
I thought you'd played it. Okay, I'll let you off. I thought you played it.
I want to get around to it. There's just so much on my backlog that I'm just like,
let's not talk about backlogs. It's like mine's like the list.
No,
is,
like
is...
it's. I remember I followed the devs on Twitter for a very long time, like for at least 2 years, and so long that I tried to get them on Games and Groceries. So that's how long I've been following them on Twitter. Yeah. I wanted to get them on, and then like, what's that?
How many years was that?
Since I ended it?
No, that you like followed them to try and get them on Games and Groceries.
Well, I ended Games and Groceries in 2021, and I started it in 2017. So probably I started following them around like 2019, 2020, probably on Twitter. So. Yeah, about like 3 or 4 years, give or take.
Okay.
But yeah, and I thought they were like really good visionaries. They showed gameplay and like what their vision was for this game. And then the release came and I just haven't gotten around to it. I'm so stupid.
I knew about that.
There is a non-binary character on Goodbye Volcano High, and I'm so stupid.
Just add on to what you're saying there as well. Like, I have followed Luke for like 9 years, trying to get him onto the channel. Started only 3 years ago, but I followed Luke for 9 years, and hopefully he comes on this year to talk about Lost Records. Hopefully Luke comes on and talks about Lost Records, because that's 9 years of my life. That's I'm never gonna get back on that. But no, I thought we'd use Not the Milk Bar Kids comment for this video. So thank you for that comment as well. And I thought it was a great springboard on our entire conversation we had in the last episode about Lost Records. So as always as well, as I said, if you do want your comment featured on the podcast, come to the YouTube channel on this episode, drop a comment, let us know what you think. It could be anything you want to talk about. If you want to talk about something in general or something that's been talked about in the podcast episode, if you want to talk about Life is Strange 1, obviously, because this is a big episode we're talking about, 9 year anniversary. Leave us your thoughts in the comments. We'll pick out the best comment and we'll read it onto the next podcast. And we'll try and like obviously change users as well, so we give people all the time in the world. As I said, you can talk about anything, and you can like criticize Adam's Games Pass, so you can criticize Adam's taste in music, you can criticize all kinds of things. So you can do like whatever you want, as long as it's respectful, as you will. You were at the top of your own Spotify Wrapped last year. You have no place to talk about anything.
That's like number two.
You're number two. Yeah, sorry. You're above Post Malone. That still blows my mind. You, Adam Evolt, were above Post Malone on Adam Evolt Spotify Wrapped. That is wild in my eyes.
Like, I know. Damn. Shame.
I hope you get to the top this year. I hope Taylor Swift.
No, I'm not. Not doing that. I'm gonna actually have real artists on my top list this year, and not just me. A-Bug was my number one, and A-Bug is fantastic at what he does. So shout out to A-Bug.
Well, Taylor Swift made a big entry in mine late stages of last year. I think she's going to be top this year, and I'm really disappointed with like how far that's fallen for me, that, but she will be the top this year for me. Anyway, Adam, spread the arts.
Yes.
Do you want to go first?
Sure. I have one quick one before I get to my serious one.
Oh.
I finally watched Missing, like you recommended.
Oh.
Yes.
You watched Missing.
Ooh. I watched Missing.
Hello.
And I was really worried that I was going to suffer like sequelitis of just being like, I fall short. Dude, I just watched it and I was like, I will never ever write a movie as intricate as Missing is. Like searching already had like peak levels. I'm like, okay, can I do it again? There's no more I'm gonna say about it for the listeners, but I'm just like, Missing is really good. And you need to watch it. That's it. That's all I'm gonna say. Going cold. You don't even need to watch Searching. You can watch Missing by itself, and that's cool. But watch Searching, but also watch Missing. It's great. But
are you gonna watch the other one, by the way?
No, I'm gonna get to that. I do. Okay. It is on my list.
Quite interesting. The other one, that's very much a standalone. Like Missing and Searching are like very similar, but like, one's completely different animal in itself. Like, it's so different. But you're right though. This dodged sequel syndrome, and it's like actually it worked. I think they did enough though, June, to like really break, because it's like you expect this to happen because you watched the first film, but it's like more about, let's refine and tweak every bit of the wheels that we possibly can to kind of make it as different as possible. And it worked very well. But I'm glad that you watched it though.
It was good. So that's my one quick one that I took your recommendation. I watched Missing and it was really good.
Very nice.
The other one, so I've been listening to audiobooks through Spotify Premium. If you have it, you have 15 hours of audiobooks every single month. And I already mentioned I listened to Reggie Fils-Aimé's book. And I just listened to, and I actually highly recommend this one. I didn't think I would like this one. Arnold Schwarzenegger's book called Be Useful. And it's called the caption is Be Useful, 7 Tools for Life. It's what it's called. So there it is. It's excellent. I really, really enjoyed this book. Now, I will say this, that it is for people that are like me. We're not just like, oh, we're driven people, but more of just like focus, like you have a goal. Like it's more for people who have like, you have a goal, you have like this broad spectrum of things. And he kind of refines it. He chips away, like, well, you should try this, and this. But for my wife, who, you know, it's not a bad thing to be, but she's very much a person that just like, give me my goals for the day and I'll get them done. You know, kind of like one of those, like, she is very much like task oriented. Like, here are the things you need to do. Go do them. It's not a book for that kind of person. Not wrong thing. It's just if you're just really driven to one thing. But he is brutal in this book. He's very brutal. Like, he's brutally honest. Like, there's one part in the book where it's talking about like time management and all that, and like managing who you are. And he says, every single day I go into the gym and you know what I see? I see a person doing the lat pulls, and most of the time, if they're not doing the full stretch and all the lat pulls, they're not doing their full stretch as a father. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like he gets brutal with it. But it's a short read. It's 6 hours on Spotify. But I really liked it. He gave some really sound advice. He's open to his mistakes. And the best part is, last thing I'll say about this, right? The refreshing part about this book is that it's not a self-help book, but like, here's how you can be a leader. Here's how you can be an entrepreneur. Here's how you can be. He's like saying like, okay, how can we shape that for you to be the best father? How can we shape that to be the best mechanic? How can we shape that to be? He even mentions like some of the people who get the highest score on video games. Like, he mentions that. Like, if your goal is to be like the high score video games, here's how you accomplish that. So it's like, it breaks it down and then says like, well, what are your goals and how can we shape it to be that goal? So I thought it was really good on that. So again, mine is Be Useful, 7 Tools for Life by Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's actually really good. I recommend it.
That's really interesting. No, you got a very interesting choice. And the Reggie Feeds May one, I want to get to this year. I really want to listen to that audiobook because...
Yeah, that one's interesting, yeah.
When you said to me the opening is basically him being at Iwata's funeral, I was like, oh, this is like, that just sounds like one of the most interesting places to start a story. And then I'm quite interested to hear more about that story. So I will try and check that one out. I'm going to check out this Schwarzenegger one as well when I get a chance. Mm-hmm. So mine's nowhere near as illuminating as yours, unfortunately. Mine was just, I watched the first Harry Potter film recently.
Oh.
Because me and Kylie were talking about him on that podcast episode, and Kylie was opening about how big of a Harry Potter fan she is. It was quite surprising. I was like, actually, that makes sense why she likes the British people and why she likes all the accents and stuff. Yeah. And I know Dave's a big fan of Harry Potter as well. But no, I watched that first one and I don't like living now, Adam. Like, I don't like living the present, man. Everything feels just so, why is everything so black and dark? It's like, do you know that period of like films? It like bled through from the 90s. So it's like Harry Potter, Spider-Man, X-Men. There was still like dark enough and like moments of darkness, but they were still colorful and it felt like the world had a bit of magic in it. It's like now it's like,
I will even say like, kudos to John Williams for his score in that, because it made it feel magical. Like, it's not just like the colors of the contrast of the screen, but like his jazz influence. John Williams was was originally a jazz artist. And just that influence that that's why he almost didn't get hired for Star Wars. Because Steven Spielberg went to George Lucas and said, well, I have this composer. His name is John Williams. He's like, the jazz artist? Like, really? I don't think he can do that. But no, it's that influence of color and brightness and just like that flesh out feel. Whereas like AAA movies nowadays is all just like, and it's like, like really like triumphant sounds. Like, no, it's just make it bright, make it flashy. So, not to take away from what you're saying.
I find that all interesting. That's all interesting you mentioned that. It would have been funny to see John Williams in the Cantina Band with the band playing.
That makes sense that he did the Cantina music, because like, he's a jazz artist.
So. Yeah, he would have fit in well with him in the scene if he wouldn't have got casted. I play that same song.
By the way, 91 years old, still kicking, still going, still making music.
Oh my God. His discography, his like collection of work. Oh my God. Like, where do you start with what he's made for music? So like Harry Potter, Jurassic Park. He's like Jaws. Basically composed Jaws, Indiana. He's basically done everything. Like anything major or iconic has basically been him. Like the only person for me in like the composer world that compares to John Williams is like, it's very much a rung below him in terms of like fame, popularity, is Hans Zimmer. It's like Hans Zimmer's style is completely different, but like John Williams is like your Miyamoto, your like Kubrick, like your Spielberg of like whatever profession it is. Like his body of work is unbelievable. Yeah, like to be in this film as well, like in the first Harry Potter film, it's so magical. And it's like those first three films are interesting. Like the second one's not as strong, but the Christopher Columbus 2 films are very good though to start with. And then obviously the tonal change it takes with Alfonso Cuarón's Prisoner of Azkaban is fine for me. That was dark enough as it is because it has to take that tone. But the first Harry Potter film, like J.K. Rowling, like, you know, like Steven Spielberg famously wanted to make it animated Harry Potter. I think he didn't want it live action. And I'm like, God, Christopher Columbus came in and did like a live action Harry Potter film and did it like that. And it's like, that is like one of the most magical films I've ever seen. Like withstood the test of time. And it's like, you everything about it is iconic. You know, I still correct people now. It's not Leviosa.
It's Leviosa.
it's great. It's so magical. And it's like, I always feel like if you ever want to kind of like connect with your childhood, and you're like our age, by the way, when I say childhood, go and watch those films because it'll remind you of like how great the early 2000s were. That was before, obviously, the financial crisis, the COVID pandemic, when everything else happened. Like, you know, when people tell us we had a hard time, we've experienced it, trust me. It's like we've seen all the ups and downs, but like that early period when it came out, oh my God. Great film. Like, you know,
it's on HBO Max, by the way.
Oh, there we go. Go and check it out if you haven't. In 4K as well.
In 4K.
Do you know what as well? And even when they've upscaled it, it makes it look nicer. It's not even like have the George Lucas upscale treatment where like 15 different aliens are added in. It's just like a conventional upscale, and oh God, it's so good. And, you know, rest in peace, my boy, Alan Rickman. That's just so sad, that as well. But no, like, even that as well, like that, if we're talking about Life is Strange before, and you talk about the first Harry Potter film, they nailed the castings, man. Like, all the castings were just so on point. I don't think they could have, like, nailed them any. But I would say this to people. It's like, some people were made to play certain roles. So, for example, I could never hear Max Caulfield as anyone else. I could never hear Rachel Amber as anyone else. They were like, I would imagine if you were a casting director and they walked in, you hear the voice, you're like, oh, what an opportunity, what a moment. It's like the casting has been complete. And the same happens with Rupert Grint, Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, Alan Rickman, all the actors that are in there.
Yes.
Spot on. So that is my pick.
No, Dumbledore of the first two or the rest of Dumbledores? Which actor is better?
I think that they both work well. As they do. So, for example, like when they changed from the first actor, I can't remember his name, but when they changed to Michael Gambon in the third Harry Potter film, that change has to happen because they take the tonal change shift. So he's no longer as calm and like he still comes across as calm and collective in the books, but I think he needs to take that tonal change where he can rough a little bit more. Yeah, like obviously he's a bit too rough in the Goblet of Fire when he grabs him and throws him against the case.
Why
like,
did you
like,
do this? It's like
yeah, why did you what
14.
Yeah, it's like, why did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire, Harry? It's like you know, chill Dumbledore a little bit. That's like a bit too much. And by the way, that four film is really interesting as well. Mm. It's like the guy who directed it didn't even like the books. I don't think he read the books. It's like wild, like the way that they made it. I think even Alfonso Cuarón didn't read the third book or something. It's a bit weird that they went the direction they did. But anyway, I'm going to say that they're both good. I like them. I think that the tonal change it takes after the second film in a way it becomes darker with like the Dementors, the Voldemort coming back, etc. I think the Dumbledore we get afterwards is good. I enjoy him. So I think it's actually a nice continuation, personally speaking.
Definitely, how definitely. No, I liked the tone of the first actor, and I can't remember his name either. Rest in peace. But yeah, the tonal shift was needed. But yeah, like it was a comforting Dumbledore to a much more broadened Dumbledore, a lot more on edge Dumbledore. So, but yeah, dude, I'm very much on your camp of like the first movie though. The first movie was always gonna be like in my heart because I saw that in theaters. I remember I went with my friend and my dad to go see it in theaters. My dad fell asleep, of course, like within like the first 20 minutes, he just passed out in the movie theater. I was like, cool, great. But
I think that Harry Potter entire like universe, her JK Rowling's writing, I think that's probably the last major franchise that was spawned, like, and I mean franchise of that period of like last maybe 30 years. I don't think anything else has become even comparable. I mean, because like when we talk about Harry Potter, it's in the same echelon as like Star Wars, for example, of like popularity, success, etc. I don't think anything else has really come close to it since then. I think that was like to even create something like that as she did, JK Rowling, it's like quite mad, like the universe that it spawned. Like it basically, and on top of that as well, it raised a generation of people to read as well.
Yes.
Because it was like 101 like literacy of like people reading at such a young age. And it's like wild that that basically became like the next big like universe. Because I think like to get like a Harry Potter now, I think it would be almost impossible. I don't think I've seen anything that even comes close to it in the last 15 years at least.
Percy Jackson, but like not even like that level.
Successful, whatever, but like not even the same like, you know, realm. Bracket. Not even the same
Percy Jackson like Universal Park, you know.
Because that even like even the Harry Potter thing, like obviously it's got like loads of inspirations from like, you know, Lord of the Rings and stuff, but like even that is bigger than Lord of the Rings, personally speaking, like as a universe and stuff like that, with like the fandom, the films.
Plus that was
TVs
generations and... apart in terms of like the book. That was a whole generation like separated. And then with the movies, Peter Jackson did it, so.
Yeah. By the way, as well, one more thing before we wrap up. So I still find it wild that even in this like entire area of like, you know, digital, because they've talked about it, but like, you know, the generation of like, you know, TV shows, Netflix, etc. They never made a TV show earlier. Always surprised me that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they're going to. I completely forgot about that. And I am not looking forward to that.
No, they're not. But yeah, it'll be it'd be interesting. But I found it interesting that it's only happening now after all this time.
That's
I thought
true.
It would easily have like done it like 10 years ago. It would be massive. But anyway, right. We've been talking about Harry Potter for too long, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for joining us. Let us know what you think about First Life is Strange. Obviously, we'd love to hear your thoughts as well. It's such a great game as well. So let us share and revel in the joy of Life is Strange 1 in the comments in the YouTube video. So do leave us your thoughts. And remember as well, we can read your comment out on the next episode. So leave us something interesting or whatever, and we'll pick one out and pick the best one to read. Anyway, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed. If you are new here one more time as well, please do drop a subscribe to the channel, turn on notifications, like the video, and share with your friends. Helps keep up to date with the content that we produce, helps keep up to date with everything we talk about. It's content exclusive to YouTube channel, so do stay tuned with that. And Strangecast is available on all podcast services. So we're available on video version on Spotify. We're available on Apple Podcasts. We're available on everything. So please do leave us a rating on Spotify. Please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts, because it would be great to help support this podcast. Obviously, we'll be back later this month, very much at the end of the month, with another episode. That'll be the, you know, the final episode of the month. So we'll have a bit of chat here and there about stuff. So hopefully we see more Lost Record stuff and maybe some Life is Strange things come about, because otherwise this podcast sometimes gets very difficult, doesn't it? Like with news topics, because like, oh.
Yeah.
But anyway, like, as you will. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Take care, guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Peace.
Ready for the mosh pit, Shaka Brah.